A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. This episode is one of our deep dives. We are going to be deep diving into real life Star Tours. What if we actually could plan a vacation in the galaxy far, far away? I am Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok, and I feel as though I'm 8 years old waiting in line in Anaheim for Star Tours. It's going to be fun traveling the galaxy, then, now, and forever.
Yeah, I am very excited. We often have similar opinions about Star Wars things or thoughts or experiences. Sure. And this is one, when I was writing up some of these questions, I have no idea which planets you're going to pick. Some I'm like, I guess. Others I'm like, this is going to be a fun, wild ride in conversation as well as in imagination of literal travel. Because I had no idea where you're going to go. But right now, here's where we're going to go, a transition. We're going to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are recommending Victory's Price by Alexander Freed, the third book in the Alphabet Squadron trilogy. We're going to be be digging into that one in a couple of weeks. So if you want to be all caught up, you can listen to it by downloading your free audiobook. You can do that at audibletrial.com/4Center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4Center for your free audiobook. But our tour of recommendations and offers is not over. We have another one to visit, right, Ken?
We do. We have another offer indeed. Inside Editions, publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books, is offering 35% off across their website with a special 4Center code. To get your discount, enter the coupon code FC35 or coupon if that's what you want to do. And visit the website with this link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we're recommending the upcoming Inside Editions book, Star Wars Galactic Baking, due on May the 4th. So check it out and use that code FC35. Joseph, you a coupon guy or a coupon guy?
I am a, I think, a sudden panic before I say the word guy, trying to decide coupon. What are the two? It's coupon. So I guess coupon.
Coupon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Coupon. I think more, this is a 4Center word talk. Yeah, I think I'm a coupon guy, but I say on this copy, I say coupon.
Coupon, so, coupon. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Reach across the aisle.
Thank you. Yeah, and it's weird to like sometimes I know like, oh, that's a regionalism that I picked up mostly growing up in Minnesota in the Midwest. And sometimes it's just like, maybe I read that, you know, in a comic book when I was, you know, yeah, six and just decided that's how you say that.
Like most Star Wars names at some point. Yeah.
Right. Of course I can't. I used to think it was when I had just read it. I was incorrect. Let's dive into our main topic, which will include the planet Coruscant. We thought it'd be fun to talk just sort of the ability to actually travel in the galaxy far, far away. We've gotten a lot of great questions over the years about which planet would you visit for this, which planet would you take a vacation on, which the best planet, all that. So we have discussed that, but this came to me, Ken, because I think there is light at the end of the pandemic tunnel, right? As things are moving forward with vaccines, and future travel is on my mind. That possibility of, you know, where could we go now that we can go places? So I thought it would be fun to discuss, you know, if there was actual real life, like the setup of the Star Tours ride, that, you know, you stand in line and the ships are going to all these different planets. If we could visit different Star Wars planets, do specific tourist activities, you know, which planets would have tours and museums? Where would we go camping? Where would we just want to be away from everybody? Where would we want to dive into the culture? All that stuff. And really approaching it from an honest perspective, because sometimes you'd be like, yeah, I want to go to Mustafar. I'm like, no, I don't. It's terrifying. In reality, no, I don't.
No.
So I tried to approach this honestly. But to give a frame of reference, I'm really curious to start off with talking about travel in our actual real human planet. Was travel a big part of your childhood? Do you enjoy it? What is good real world travel to you?
So the answer is no, as far as childhood. We did get one vacation a year. I think I talked about it. We always went to Yosemite, which, again, might explain why a lot of my answers end up being Brightree Village for a lot of things. Anytime we get this question, Yosemite was like our yearly trip, or Thanksgiving to Green Valley Lake, which is in the San Bernardino Mountains above Big Bear and Lake Arrowhead, which, again, Brightree Village. So that was that. We were just a lower middle class family. My parents made do, and I never felt the pinch. Had a great childhood. Can't complain there. And that's why traveling just didn't seem, it just seemed like some other people did. And I didn't even take my first plane flight, get this, until I was 30, going to Las Vegas. Just never had reason to. And then I hit the ground running here in LA, grindstone, nose to the grindstone type of thing. And just didn't think I could travel. And it was my friend one day, friend Brian, who was like, what are you doing this weekend? I was like, I don't know, working around the house trying to write a script. He's like, no, we're going to go to Vegas. And I was like, we can't do that. We can't do that. Well, no, we can't do that at all. I can't travel. And so it's expanded to the point where I do love now. I haven't, I'm embarrassed to say, have been outside the United States. Can't wait to do that. Can't wait to experience the world and other places. It's on my list to do. But I love last few years, going about 2008 on, just been traveling the country. I do love it. A couple cross-country drives, doing comedy with Mark Ellis has been great. And my favorite thing about traveling is, of course, hotel lobbies, Joseph.
Yes, I think that is probably going to come up in our discussion. Yeah, very similar for myself, of definitely lower middle class. Travel was not a thing. That was for other people. Like, yeah, Disney World was, or Disneyland, that was like, yeah, I'll go there as much as I will, you know, go to Tatooine. That's another world. When I was young, I have mentioned, you know, born in Minnesota, we did move out to Portland, Oregon when I was a kid, and we just drove out there. So I think that gave me a sense of very young wanting to see other places, you know, like knowing that there are other places, because at such a young age, you know, went out not only driving across, you know, the country and staying in, you know, roadside motels, but stopping at weird little tourist trap places. And then when we lived in Portland, you know, we went up to visit some friends of my parents in Seattle and this, you know, great woodland forest. We went out to the ocean near Portland by Haystack Rock, and you know, I think I got this taste of it. But then moved back to Minnesota very quickly, didn't go anywhere for years and years and years. And then my grandmother briefly lived in the like most southern part of Texas. And my mom decided that we were going to take a Greyhound. So we took a Greyhound all the way from Minnesota to Texas, and it did not go smoothly at all.
that's a Paul Simon song, America. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Like the initial itinerary is like, oh, that's going to take a very long time, and that's going to be like 5 buses. And like, oh, that's going to take 2 days longer, and that's going to be like 12 buses, you know, because they just oversold. And then they'd call in, you know, we got stranded somewhere in the middle of the country, and they called in a driver, and then the driver had to come in, and we all got on the bus. And the driver's like, all right, does anybody know how to get to Tulsa? like that level of like comic adventure. And then, we ended up taking a plane back, and that was the first time that I flew. And then as I got older, started to I had reason to visit the UK. You know, went to Scotland, England, Wales, and Ireland. Went to Paris. Lived in the UK for 3 months with my then fiance, now wife, Sarah, when she was going to school there. And then, started traveling more for conventions. And that's a different kind of travel, right? Where it really is. Sometimes you see a little bit of the city if you make a point of it. But other than that, it's just getting really used to the grind of the airport and the joys of the hotels and convention centers.
It's a thing. I think I always cite this. I think one of our early connections, just you and I, just holding court in a hotel lobby bar in Vegas and just going, yeah, I like this. Just, yeah, you can, this is what I like to do.
It is a fun way to travel, to just sit in hotels, and that's going to come up a lot in my discussion. Any other thoughts on real world travel before we get into the Star Wars of it?
No. Other than it's so funny that things from your childhood I still sometimes have the thought of like, what? You book a hotel and a flight, and you go.
You just choose that. That's allowed. Yeah. I think the last thing for me is I think a lot about the duality that I think we have as humans of craving both comfort and adventure. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that travel can be either of those things, right? You can go to some place that's really different from your culture, where you don't even talk the language, or you can go to somewhere remote and do something really physically challenging and arduous. Or it can be about like, I'm going to somewhere beautiful. I don't do any of the dishes. I order food to my room. It, like, travel can either be, you know, absolute adventure or absolute comfort. And that's one of the things I'm interested to see what comes up in our discussion of which Star Wars planets we'd go to. Do we lean toward, are we craving, you know, being pampered on Naboo, you know, or, you know, going, you know, parasailing on Kashyyyk, you know?
That's awesome. Oh, this is gonna be fun.
Yeah, excellent. Very excited to get into it. The other thing I wanted to talk about before we start listing our planets is just the Star Wars actual relationship with travel. I was thinking about how in some ways the actual narrative of Star Wars is a travelogue. It is often characters going from planet to planet. But in particular, I look back at that trailer that you and I have talked about a decent amount. It's from 1976. It's one of the, you know, original Star Wars trailers that really frames Star Wars as travel in the text. You know, it's just clips of, you know, A New Hope. And even now, knowing the film so well, like some of them don't have ADR yet. And it's an actual clunk of a stormtrooper falling over. You know, it's so early. But the text is really clear, right? The voiceover says, an adventure unlike anything on your planet. It's an epic of heroes and villains and aliens from 1,000 worlds, 1 billion years in the making, and it's coming to your galaxy this summer. There's such a framing that watching Star Wars is travel, that you're traveling to somewhere just bizarre and different, and to even, you know, comprehend it has to come to our galaxy this summer. Is that important to Star Wars to you? Do you still think of Star Wars as travel, as adventure, as exploration into the unknown?
I absolutely really do. And I think that's one of the things I love about Rise of Skywalker. And one of the things I do love about the sequel era is getting to see and read about, let's not forget some of the wonderful new planets and novels, just getting to see more of the galaxy. Yeah, I'm going back to the 2014 Force Awakens teaser trailer. We saw sand and sand dunes, and we all went Tatooine. That's not a far, with Star Wars films, not a far reach. Tatooine shows up a lot. I got to tell you, I've always secretly and not so secretly really enjoyed that wasn't Tatooine. It was a completely other new planet. And I get excited, and I just... Doesn't mean would I've wanted to spend a little more time on Endor in Rise of Skywalker? Yeah. In fact, remember we were so excited. We were convinced that was a Pathfinder Rebel helmet that Rey had dropped in
yes.
training sequence. We were really convinced. We thought we heard Ewoks in the background, or at least the birds of Endor. Would I have enjoyed that? Yes, 100%. But I don't need a what if myself out of the joy of it, because all the new planets in Rise of Skywalker just introduced me to so many different parts of the galaxy. It sounds like I'm being cheesy. It sounds like I'm just taking my heart in my sleeve for the sake of it, of the conversation. No, I really love now. I'm so used to, even in Mandalorian. Ooh, Snow, is it Ilum? That'd be cool. No, I bet it's something new we've never seen. And look what we got to experience when we got to go to that ice planet in the second episode of the second season of Mandalorian. Something just crazy. So yeah, I still see it as that. I still think it's key to the story.
Yeah, I love that you're bringing up Rise of Skywalker, because I think another way that Rise of Skywalker tries to reconnect to that vibe is that the light speed skipping, right? And you don't know exactly what it's a strange reflective planet and it spires and green smoky, you know, with a monster, and you just kind of don't know what it is in that idea that this galaxy is so huge and so endless. I think sometimes Star Wars has lost a little bit of that exploration of the unknown, partially just because we're very familiar with Star Wars. And often when we see sand, you know what? It is Tatooine. And also, you know, in comparison to 1976, when this trailer was coming out, you know, seeing exotic genre worlds is not as rare as it was then. So I think all those things add up to, like, sometimes that vibe isn't there as much. But I always think it's there in the storytelling, right? Even going to like Phantom Menace, when I was putting this together, I started to think about Anakin's staring up at the stars and asking Qui-Gon if they all have systems and has anyone been to all of them? And he says, I want to be the first one to see them all. And I normally focus on that line because my mind always fills in and it slaughtered many people there. But, you know, going away from the joke to the spirit of that there is that spirit in Star Wars of, hey, home is great. Home matters, but I want to get out and see everything there is to be seen. And that real spirit of adventure, that travel is a part of Star Wars' key spirit of adventure.
It's very much, you know, very much. I can't, you know, I want, every time I see the Falcon, you just want to go to a new spot.
Yeah. So let's go then to some new spots. I wrestled with how to set this up, Ken, because, you know, sometimes we do some longer episodes.
Sure, I've heard.
And sometimes those episodes get long because I'm really trying to be a completist and not leave anything out. Sure. There are so many planets in Star Wars. We are going to cover the big ones. We'll be leaving some out. But the way I decided to do this, Ken, is we're going to walk through the films in release order. We're going to talk about the major planets, and then we're just going to pick one that we would be that's the one out of this set of planets that we would add to our itinerary. And we're going to decide what we'd want to do on that planet. Maybe imagine what kind of tourist traps they have set up. If there's a planet you refuse to visit, feel free to tell me that too. And the other way we've constructed this game is we're only listing planets in their first appearance. So we're starting with A New Hope, and this is going to be our only shot at Tatooine because we're not going to repeat every time it shows up.
Ooh, oh, that's a good, this is like a game show now. That's a good rule. Toss, that's a good rule.
Yeah, yeah. See, limitations can be fun, right?
Yeah, they can. Oh, boy.
Here we go, then. We're going to start with A New Hope. We've got Tatooine, of course, Yavin 4, the Death Star, and briefly, Alderaan. If you had to pick one of those, where are you going? What do you want to do? What tourist traps do they have set up? What do you got?
Man, gosh. Scrimshaw, I want my answer to be the Death Star, there's so many things I just love about Tatooine, including I'd love to get up to Jabba's palace, including Mos Eisley, Mos Espa, any Mos I'd visit. but without a doubt, I think we're also having some fun with what we as human beings on this planet, what kind of weather conditions and climates we're attracted to or want to explore. I don't like the heat, even though I've pretty much been living out here in the LA desert for a long time. And I'm used to the summers. They get a little hot. It's a dry heat, as I said, which is also why I wouldn't go to Yavin 4. A lot of humidity. I don't think I can't survive too well in the humidity. So it's like Tatooine, out and about, seeing the world, but a little bit of heat, and the Death Star, which I got to imagine some great central AC. Which is where I'm always going to. So I'm going to make the tough decision, and I'm going to go with the Death Star.
You're going to go to the Death Star.
I actually dropped a pen. I was so nervous. I dropped a pen.
You're going to go to the Death Star mostly for the AC. What do you do on the Death Star? Let's imagine it survived, or they built a, you know, someone in the galaxy built a recreation of it. What do you do on the Death Star?
It's like, what do we do in hotels? I'd just find a place to eat and drink and talk to people. But as a child, one of the trips we did take, my dad was in the Navy. My late uncle was as well. And so my dad loves the big ships, used to build the models of them. So I've been on a couple tours of ships, and USS Enterprise is one of the ones I got to go on, which is massive aircraft carrier. And everything. And as a youngster, probably about 9 or 10, it is a Death Star. It's the biggest thing in the world. I don't mean that as any commentary. I just mean in terms of size and this thing, it's not a vehicle. It is just a floating city to me. And it essentially is with an airport. So I think I just would want to get a maintenance job on the Death Star, and not that I'm good at it, maybe work in the kitchen and just kind of exist and live in this kind of weird kind of portable infrastructure that's just going along the galaxy, fully functional, and experiencing just, it's a planet. I mean, I always talk about the Claudia Gray Lost Stars explanation of there's some stormtroopers and personnel who did not know the Death Star blew up Alderaan, even though they were on it, because they were like on the other side. We can't use that as an excuse, but just like they didn't, I don't know. We flew to location. Something happened. Something shook. We don't know. I was down in the mess hall.
Yeah.
I want to experience the enormity of this facility.
Okay. I love what you're saying, because I hear you saying kind of two things. One is this sort of like, tour the technological terror, like to just really actually like walk through and like here are the nuts and bolts, here's this impressive thing we built, right? Yeah. That's the real tourism. But then you're also talking about it's a giant efficient let's say evil floating hotel where you could just be like, look, they've got a Starbucks. I just live here.
Yeah just want to live there.
Death Star is a long stay motel. That's your first stop. I love it. This was really, really hard, but I had to wrestle with that reality of what I actually enjoy when I travel. And there's a part of me is like Tatooine. Oh, but the heat and the travel and the discomfort. I know we don't spend quality time on the surface, but I'm counting Alderaan as appearing. It appears and then it disappears. I would absolutely go to Alderaan, right? There's so many descriptions in the books about its culture. And one of the things I love doing is going to art museums or writer museums. My wife and I went to both Edinburgh and Dublin, kind of one right after the other, and they both have writer museums. And it's just such a great way to start understanding how the place sees itself. Like, you know, it's what is its favorite children write about it, you know? I love going to art museums, and I know Alderaan would have great art museums. And then I'm going to be honest, you know, one of the things that I like to do when traveling is just have a little drink. So the idea that I could go to an Alderaanian art museum and then have a big, big glass of Tanqueray, that's honestly where I'm going to go.
Oh, hear me out. This is a total Southern California Four Center conversation point. Alderaan, a little bit like going up to the Getty Center.
It is. It is. Yeah. Well, my wife and I took a trip up to the Solvang, the Dutch town. And that's just this weird, but very, very pleasant community. And it's a tourist stop and it has a ton of wine tastings. And yeah, like let's look at this fun community, go to a little bookstore, drink some wine. I'll do that on Alderaan.
Yeah. And then get out before the getting's good. Yes. But yeah. Yeah. The second you get to spend it in Revenge of the Sith, I was like, oh, so that's what it is.
It's so beautiful. Yeah. And I know some people going to Alderaan and be like, yeah, I'm going to climb a mountain. I'll be like, that's cool.
Sure.
I'm going to look at a painting of somebody else climbing the mountain.
Yeah.
Some of these answers, I think there'll be a theme coming out of them. But let's move on to, on our travelogue to Empire Strikes Back. We have Hoth, Bespin / Cloud City. Probably can't literally visit Bespin. Wouldn't be safe, what with the gas giant and all. And then, of course, Dagobah. Ken, which one are you picking and what are you doing?
I love the cold. I love the cold. You want to put me in a ski lodge? I don't want to ski. I just want to sit there drinking hot chocolate. but Hoth... the answer is Cloud City. Let's just cut to the chase. The answer is Cloud City. Good urban environment. I think Lando brought some absolute style and charm to that place. I love the Empire Special Edition version is even better, but the original one in 1980 isn't bad itself. Like I just like it. You and I've talked about it. Love rolling around in Battlefront games and that. Dagobah, nope. I can't. There's just too many things. I would never leave the hut. Hoth, it's not. It's too cold. Maybe it's just too cold. It's not. That's not a ski lodge. That's an experience. Yeah.
No, it is. It is a survivalist's dream.
Apparently.
Yeah. No, I can't do Hoth myself because I have lived in extreme cold growing up in Minnesota, which runs both extremely cold, extremely hot, and almost nothing in between. So I couldn't do Hoth. Dagobah, you know, this is what's fun about this because, you know, if you're picturing yourself as a Jedi, as an adventurer in the galaxy of Star Wars, like, yeah, I want to go to Dagobah. Yeah, I want to go to the cave and see and confront myself. Like, no, I don't want to. I don't want to confront myself in a nightmare tree while a snake crawls all over me. That's not a pleasant real world vacation. So, yeah, I'm going to Cloud City. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's just therapy. Dagobah's just therapy. I'll go to therapy. I don't need to go to a mud bog to do it.
Dagobah, slimy mudhole therapy planet this is. Yeah. Cloud City, you know, I love all of those sculptures. Those big freestanding sculptures that are in the background. I picture myself taking selfies with those. Maybe you catch Vader walking in the background. But I love the way it's been fleshed out as like it's a city. I mean it's you know got a function of mining Tabanagas, but it is a city with like shopping and it feels like what if the Mall of America, also from my home of Minnesota, was just absolutely gorgeous, you know, and you could go to see, you know, the new Hollow movie and then you could go, you know, pick out some clothes or a high end souvenir. I'm going to get this, you know, really nice glass plate to give as a gift to somebody for the holidays. And then when I was picturing it as like this amazing floating mall, it's like, I bet there are like Cloud City mall walkers who just like get a bunch of exercise doing loops.
You know, 100%. And then, by the way, they get mad at you if you take the parking spots close to the mall at 5 in the morning because they have to walk farther. That's another life conversation I've had. Yes. Well, you know, essentially, I bring it in the Mall of America. You're kind of describing a lifestyle center, say a Americana brand, Caruso property in L.A., where we got a mall, let's put a fountain and an apartment complex in it. And I've always secretly kind of wanted to live in one of those.
I'm so fascinated by that when I go there and it's just like, yeah, these apartments just looking out on a bunch of people shopping.
You know, it's not like New York City. That's a different experience. But like when we got the job at Collider and left, I used to drive about an hour, sometimes hour 40 minutes to get to Beverly Hills for the Screen Junkies job from my house. And it was just too much. And I was 10 minutes from the Collider Studios in downtown Burbank. But I really, me and Mark Ellis used to dream about, let's get one of those apartments above the AMC theater. You know, like, would you always hear kids every night screaming in the, but Johnny Rockets is right down below you. So I don't know. Again, hotel lobby water. That's what we love. So Cloud City kind of has that vibe to me versus Coruscant is kind of New York City to me. We'll cross that conversation bridge when we get there. But yeah, Cloud City is smooth. You get to feel the hustle and bustle of the whole business and the industry that's around it. And you get to go to local watering holes and hang out and then walk, stumble 5 feet to your apartment. I like it.
Right. Yeah. And it's all got this like level of elegance, right? Because it feels like you would be like, there'd be a little bit of like, hey, yeah, Bestman Cloud City is open to tourists, but no flip-flops, no shorts.
Yes.
You're gonna buy something nice and everybody's going to look nice as they're going around. The other thing for me is what I've been saying to my wife right now, my wife can lean a little bit more towards let's have adventure, let's see something new. And I keep saying to my wife, I want to go somewhere beautiful with a window, and then I just want to sit by the window and read. And a part of me is like, what would you do at Cloud City? Like, I'm sure they have like little, reclining couches right by the window to look out at the beautiful clouds. I want to sit there and read a book. That's what I want to do.
Just hear every now and then, do-do-do-do-do-do-do, as a cloud car goes by.
Oh, and I would get so excited trying to peek in there and see the little cloud car pilots. Oh, great.
And look, I know there's listeners who are like, look, Joseph, Kent, well, give me a tent, a sleeping bag, if anything, and get me to the wilderness. I'm with you. I always wanted that. I just can't get myself to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, let's move on because we got a good discussion of that coming up. Return of the Jedi. Our options are Endor because we're winnowing down the planets that have already appeared. So we want to go to Endor, right? I know you want to go to Endor, Ken, but what is it in your mind? What do you do when you get to the forest moon of Endor?
I try to get up to that village as soon as I can. I do some exploring. I don't know, pre or post Empire. I don't know. Let's just say post. It's a little more of an idyllic setting. So my dad does love camping. My mom just never, no, there was, if she can't plug in her hair dryer, she didn't want to do it. And it wasn't like she's, true Beverly Hills or something like that. Just two different styles. And my dad he'd go with some of his friends or, whatever the church group, and they'd go into the, forest and camp for 3 days. And there was a bear knocking our tent. I'm like, well, I'm out. I'm out. But I loved going to Yosemite, Camp Curry Cabins. We could see a bear from the bus and then get back to that cabin. As long as we locked our Subaru, no bear was bothering us. So I'm a little bit of that. So Endor represents my love of forest. I do love a good pine tree. We have them out in front of our house here. I'm so blessed to have that. So I step out in my front yard to get to my car. I feel like I'm in Endor just with a 2002 Mustang. So I like it. I want to get up to the safety of the village, get a little cabin. I mentioned going to Lake Arrowhead, Green Valley Lake. It's the highest point in that mountain range out by SoCal here, where people live. And snow, bad conditions. I mean, our car got stuck in the snow. I thought we were going to die one time.
You're supposed to have chains, right?
Yeah. And even that doesn't work. I'm seven. I'm terrified. But then you get to the cabin and you get a fire and hot chocolate and your great uncle tells you a story and you just feel good. I got to imagine low gray telling me a story feels like that. And that's why I want to go to Endor.
That is great. Yeah. I'm in the same thing. Like my dad grew up, small town, Brainerd. He played outside a lot. He's, a good woods person, and he always wanted to take us camping, and it never worked out time wise, and it just never got used to it. You know, I've done some kind of naturey things with my dad. You know, he had a canoe for a while, so we never did anything rugged. We didn't, you know, go up to the Boundary Waters in Minnesota, but we would take him to the lakes in Minneapolis and do a little bit of canoeing. So, you know, I've done nature light, but it has never been a part of my life. So if I went to Endor, I totally respect that people would be like, what do I want to do? I want to build my own hut. Just be, you know, alone in the forest and forage for myself and hunt and and take care of myself. Get that. Here's what I want on Endor, Ken.
Mm-hmm.
I desperately want, and I think we joked about this in an old episode of Data Bank Brawl, I want the Republic to have worked with the Ewoks, with their permission, to have set up an interactive museum.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That is a bunch of, it's kind of adventure, but not really. I want it to be like, you can wait in line and an Ewok will safely show you how to swing on a vine.
Yeah.
And you can ride a speeder bike at speed, but it's like, it's, you know, on a rail and you're strapped in. So it only feels like you can run into the trees, but you're not really. And they've got a bunch of the helmet xylophones set up so you can play those. Like, I want to go to Endor and have like the totally safe version of like relive the experience of what the rebels went through on Endor, but totally safe.
That is like a combination of like an adult fantasy camp, like go to baseball camp, play with retired pros, meets like one of those children's museums where you can go play with big foam bricks to teach you about history. This is great. I love this idea. And me being a speeder bike fan who would never get on a motorcycle, this is perfect for me. Old speeder biking.
Safe speeder bikes. Yeah. I mean, the other thing about these locations as we go through them is, in some ways, we can go to Endor, right? because it is just an actual forest, and there are places you can visit. And for the version of Endor where I go and stay in, you know, a cabin with its own bathroom and read a book, I might do that soon.
Yeah, no, I was always obsessed with that idea as a kid of, you know, getting that behind the scenes magazine I got, and it was like Crescent City, and my mom, dad going, oh yeah, that's up at five, you know, remember when we took that trip to, you know, Corvallis, Oregon, that's right. Like, what do you mean? It's real. Why aren't we there now every day?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's such a great push pull of like, you can't visit Felucia.
Yeah.
You can kind of visit the forest moon of Endor.
Do you think, total in canon question here, do you think there is some sort of memorial set up around like the bunker or anything, you know, that they turn some of that war torn part of the village area into a memorial?
Yeah. I mean, I think to me it's definitely something that we've joked about over the years. And I think there is like a jokey version of it, but I think there is a way that really makes sense in Star Wars of, you know, some people like Mon Mothma and Leia understanding the power of storytelling. And, you know, the Empire has been a place of propaganda, right? Yeah. So it is important for them, even in, I mean, we do have some of it, like they, isn't it the, their statues are being erected at the end of, it's the aftermath, right?
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah. Been a bit for me, those details.
I think both Aftermath and Bloodline have an element of, we're unveiling something to celebrate, you know, in Coruscant is clearly loaded with things that are symbols of the past. So there's the super jokey version of like, there's historic plaques that say, here's where Chewie took the AT-SD. But then there is that much more in galaxy version that makes sense of like something important happened here. And we're going to tell the true story, you know, of honor the Ewoks, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, and look, Chirpa is nothing if not just inventive, and takes good advantage. I bet there's a gift shop there, you know, swing up there, gift shop, get yourself like a hollowed out mug.
You know? Oh yeah. And everybody's just like, God, those Ewoks are so capitalist.
Just capitalist Ewoks.
Just cashing in on their own cuteness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, we're going to move out of the original trilogy into the prequel trilogy. We are going to The Phantom Menace. Again, we've already been to Tatooine, so we have Naboo and Coruscant. That's a hard choice, Ken. Got to pick one or the other. Where are you going? What you doing?
Ooh, your rules are good. They're harsh, but they're good. I got to tell you, man, sir. Naboo's the spot, right? We all want to retire to Naboo. Every podcast, you get that question so many times. But I love Coruscant. I just love it, man. I don't know if I'll ever live in Manhattan, but I love going there, including Times Square when I'm not supposed to go because it's thirsty. I get it. Doesn't matter to me. I love the lights. I love the buzz. I love a bar at 4 a.m. I want to go to Dexter's Diner. This is why we mention it all the time. I'm going Coruscant.
Yeah, I went through the same process of like, yeah, Naboo is the answer to like, oh, no, but seriously, yeah, don't you want to go to Lake Country? Come on. But I feel like in my own itinerary here, I'm getting a little bit that vibe of the art and the culture in the history of Alderaan. Not that they're the same, but I got to go to Coruscant, right? I mean, I am ultimately, I've lived in very small towns. I've lived in mid-sized towns, but I'm ultimately a city person. I just, I'm really fascinated and electrified by all these different ideas, all these different, you know, all this different architecture and all these different people living together. And how do you make, if there are 8 bars within 2 blocks, how do you make this bar special? What makes the magic of it? Like, I love the whole city vibe. So I got to see a Coruscant. The whole city is one, their whole big planet's one city. Got to go to it. What would you do on Coruscant?
Here's what I would do. I would get my feet on the ground or my feet in a speeder and just kind of get the lay of the land. Would I want to go down to 1313? No, I'd tempt myself, but you know, I'm sure up front and in your face, that's maybe not the best area to go down, but I would explore enough, explore enough to feel as though I could survive as a local. I think that's kind of a lot of travelers. That's what you love doing. It's the, appeal of the late great Anthony Bourdain, right? Just kind of hit the ground and find the people, find the food, find the culture. And that's what I love about New York. I very quickly, once I finally got there late in life, it was like, when I'm here, I'm going to go to Times Square. I'm going to get myself a Times Square hot dog, but I also don't want to completely stand out. I want to feel like I'm here and there, that way you can experience a lot more of it. That's what I would try to do in Coruscant. I would get a little spot, kind of find out where to go and then just kind of live.
Yeah, no, that's great. I would do the same thing. I would want to see tourist Coruscant and, you know, quote unquote, real Coruscant. So, you know, if the Jedi Temple is doing tours, that's my first stop. That's what I'm there for, right? That's the whole thing. I got to see that Jedi Temple if they'll let me and, you know, actually walk through and, you know, do some reading in the archives, take some selfies. Yeah. in the Jedi Council chamber, probably not allowed, but gotta do the tourist stuff. And then Coruscant, I think because it has the storytelling is it has these many layers, the old and the new. My mind goes to the couple times I've visited Edinburgh, Scotland, which has like some very old parts and some newer parts. It's, you know, new town, old town. It's got the big castle on a hill. And the first time I went to Edinburgh, went up to the castle, which is obviously it's a tourist location, and then went to a not touristy pub, just a pub. And, you know, a friendly person, but a person from Edinburgh who'd had a few drinks noticed that we were tourists. I think it was when I tried to order a screwdriver. The bartender's like, "What are you talking about?" That's term. It's not there. And they were tipsy, but they're very friendly. Like, "You're tourists, aren't you?" I'm like, "Oh yeah." And you're like, "Did you go to the castle?" And you're like, "Yeah." And she was like, "Well, that's not the real Edinburgh experience." I was like, "Okay, cool. What's the real Edinburgh experience?" And she held her whiskey up in the air and said, "Getting pissed." And it was just one of those great moments of just, you know, the reality of, you know, there are towns that have tourist places, and then there are towns that are just like, you know, but they also have the, like, this is a real bar. This is where real people go, you know?
Yeah.
And I know Coruscant would be like that, right? So I would love to go to like this is the themed bar. Oh, did you stay at the Jedi bar with all the themes? And oh, did you, you know, have the the beer that comes out of the light that you drink out of the lightsaber glass, you tourist. But then you could go to somewhere that's just like, no, these are just people who, you know, work.
Yeah.
You know, live. And it just going from place to place, doing their thing. And you're having a real drink with the real people of Coruscant.
Love that. Look, I'd want to go see the Jedi Temple. I'd snap some pictures in front of the Senate chambers, all those kind of things. I would do that. But then, yeah, you're right. You'd head to Dexter's Diner and he'd be like, tourists, you want the real Coruscant? And he'd take it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. This is the other question I was going to ask you about Coruscant, Ken. So you and I both have in our real life travel profiles of doing shows.
Yeah.
Would you want to do a show on Coruscant?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, as a stand-up comic in L.A. for a long time, it always was just taunting me in the back of my head that I didn't do a show in New York. And finally getting to do that with Mark Ellis in a great underground New York comedy, not underground like you could, but like a New York comedy club that I had to go downstairs to get to, like, that whole experience. It just was something special, and the city does have that vibe, and I gotta imagine Coruscant, you know, it's just a little scary, but it's high energy, and it feels good when you do it, and that's what I'd sign me up.
Absolutely. I want to do stand up in the back room of the Outlander Club.
Oh yeah.
That would be great fun. Move on to Attack of the Clones. For new planets, we got Geonosis and Kamino. Which one do you pick there?
Look, the answer is Kamino. Number one, I just love rain. It's been kind of raining off and on here today as we record, so I love that. I do love rain. Kamino might be a lot of rain. You're someone who's experienced a lot of weather in one spot in your life, Joseph. But Geonosis, so I love Geonosis. I love going around Battlefront 2. That's one of my favorite maps. I think I'm fascinated with that whole culture. And you and I get to dig in a little bit to the culture and the people and the poggles and the lessers of Geonosis. It's fascinating, and they're bug-like, and you can easily overlook them, but they're so smart and they're so inventive and dangerous. I just don't. I think if we're talking about, you know, this isn't Ken from Burbank going. This is like Ken Zock from, you know, the Outer Rim. I don't think they'd want me there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I disagree with them on that, and I might have to read about it. And Kamino, it's exotic. It's urban as well. You got a big city center there inside those domes. And not a lot to do there, I wouldn't think, but I'd have to go Kamino.
Yeah. Same thing with me. I feel like Geonosis is fun to visit on screen and on video games, but that's really rough in it.
That's rough.
that's the version of travel where you prove something to yourself of like, yep, there are some hostile creatures that probably don't want me there. There is a small possibility a worm will crawl up my nose and take over my mind, you know, but besides that, you know, that's the point of travel. Challenge, new experiences. Have you ever been taken over by a Geonosian hive mind? Give it a try. That's not for me. So I got to go to Kamino. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the ocean world, but also like the constant storm. Oh, so cool. And if there's any sort of tourist attraction on Kamino, the one I pictured is that they still have like the Clone War trial rooms set up where you can practice your combat. Ooh. And it's basically like play laser tag on Kamino.
Yeah, it'd be like some of the early syndicated the version of American Gladiators when they had the, you know, it kind of looked like that. And you launch tennis balls down at your opponents as they try to get through the obstacle course. Like that's, yes, do me that. Give me the clone training experience package.
Me too, which means we're on to Revenge of the Sith and our planet count explodes. We got Kashyyyk, you know, I didn't include its appearance in the holiday special. Utapau, Mustafar, Polis Massa. And then, of course, if you add in the clone death scenes, you got Felucia, Salukami, Megiddo, Cadonimoidia. It's, you know, it's a lot going on there. So Ken, do you go to a clone death planet?
Just do the morbid clone death tour, which, you know, as a Billy the Kid aficionado who's not gone on that Billy the Kid tour, that's a little morbid too. So you're probably not too far from the truth, right? As I stare at my Young Guns poster hanging on my wall, shout out to John Fusco and Young Guns 3 coming our way. Kashyyyk's my answer, Smitten Kashyyyk, but I gotta tell you, I've always loved Megiddo, love playing it in the original Battlefront 2. And Seleukumai, you and I spent a little more time on there in the Clone Wars reviews on Clone Wars Report. Don't sleep on that planet. There's stuff going on there that I could dig. I could dig that. But yeah, Kashyyyk, a little bit like the Endor vibe for me. I just love finally seeing it in Revenge of the Sith, but also I'll say finally reading about it in Zahn's Heir of the Empire trilogy. You've got to spend a lot of quality time on Kashyyyk, and I do enjoy it. And yes, the holiday special, can't forget that. But I'm going to Kashyyyk. Just again, talk about a culture I think is really fascinating and overlooked and undervalued maybe a lot of the times, and clearly by the Empire and all the bad things they did. I'd love to go to a liberated Kashyyyk and kind of experience a little bit of their history up front and personal. So Kashyyyk it is for me.
Yeah, no, I got to agree with you. And I love the idea that if they were presenting themselves to tourists, like Seleukumai would have to be like, we're more than the place where Stas Ollie died. We have beautiful trees and farms. Yeah.
We didn't just kill a Jedi here.
But Mustafar is like, I would do a flyby tour of Mustafar. If you were in like some sort of tourist ship that was zipping through the galaxy with like, you know, strange like glass floor so you could see everything, like I'd do that. I don't need to get out on Mustafar. So right. I'm going with Kashyyyk as well. I would love to just sit in the treehouse and read. That would be great. What a great place to just read. But then for the other activities you could do on Kashyyyk, I bet that they would have not just Wookiee climbing guides. I bet that they would have like a service where you, or rather me, I'll say for myself, a puny human could be strapped to a Wookiee while the Wookiee just climbs the trees, and it would be scary as hell, but you would know you're totally safe.
Yeah, I'd love all that. I love all that. I do love Kashyyyk. And I'll say that, I don't mean to sound negative. A lot of the things about Kashyyyk in the game Fallen Order, I didn't expect to see on that planet. It went against my own expectations of that planet. It's Kashyyyk, but I'd be like, well, where's the happy tree villages?
Yeah, I know that was, I forget about that level because it's all about just climbing that massive, massive tree, right?
Yeah, and just some of the weird creatures and everything. Again, I can accept in canon that there's there, not saying anything bad about the game, but I just remember going, no, I just want to go on the beach, Kachiro Beach.
Yeah, you're right. We think of it as the beach from Revenge of the Sith, the great big tree villages. But then, yes, if you take Fallen Order into account, it's like, and also, don't poke your head out because a giant bird might come and just take you. There's always a little adventure, even on the comfort of Kashyyyk. We are going to take a quick break, and then we will dive into all of the other great planets in Star Wars. We will be right back.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Four Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Four Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back to finish our tour of planets in Star Wars, brutally forcing ourselves to pick just one from different films. And more than films, Star Wars, of course, has some great television shows. So, Ken, for our second half of our episode, I bundled some of the major planets from Clone Wars, Rebels, and Resistance. Now, this the list of planets we go to in those three shows could be just, you know, hours and hours of discussion all by themselves. So here are the ones that I picked out that are, I think we spend a lot of time on or are really major to the story of Star Wars. We got Mandalore, Lothal, Dathomir, Adalon, Ilum, Ryloth, Castellan. Those are the planets I picked out. I understand some people would be like, what about this planet? But for the sake of argument, those are the ones that I picked out. Which planet do you pick out of those?
Look, if I'm looking for maybe a new place to live or a nice relaxing week, I might go to Lothal. There's a lot of love about those rolling hills of green grass or brown grass, whatever. Sometimes Mandalore, you talk about history, but that planet, not in the best of shape, right? Stepping outside, you definitely make sure you're protected there. Dathomir, too scary for little Kenny. Adalon, Castellan, right. But see, the answer is Ilum. I am obsessed with Ilum, like a lot of people. I do love a lot of. I want to know more about it. I want to know more about when the Jedi first went there. I'd love that Starkiller Base is Ilum, but my perhaps one regret is that wasn't, you know, dealt with. You know, we didn't hear. You know, did I need to hear it in Force Awakens? Maybe not. But it would have been cool. And I was always all in those conspiracies early on. Like, it's on the same spot of the map. It is, you know, go forth there. So anyways, I'd love to visit Ilum and just kind of take in the history and then go to the Ilum gift shop. Get yourself a fake kyber crystal.
I was very, very tempted by Ilum, and you are making some good arguments for it. But the cold.
You know.
But I'm right on the fence. I'm right on the fence. I almost picked Ilum because the cold is worth it. It's definitely one of my favorite planets in all of Star Wars. The Jedi relationship with it, definitely my favorite level in Fallen Order. That was the one for me where the video game was like, I don't care about any other criticisms I might have. This is gold. White gold on Ilum. But I would go to Mandalore. because Dome City thing is really, really cool. And here's the thing about Mandalore to me is I started my itinerary with Alderaan, with museums, right? Mandalore is a place that cares about its history, makes beautiful art about its history, puts up statues. There's got to be so many museums of war on Mandalore. That would be that like really fascinating. Like, let's look at these cool weapons. Here's this one panel that is about this brutal conflict where this many people died. Here's, you know, how it happened. Here's the strategy of this clan in this battle. I would love that because, you know, sometimes that doesn't sound like the most fun experience. Yeah. When my wife and I were living in the UK for her birthday, when we were there, I was like, what do you want to do? And she's like, I want to go to a museum today. I'm like, that's great. And we went to the Imperial Museum of War. And I thought, this is going to be a weird birthday, but it was so fascinating, right? Because it's kind of this, it's the safe way to be fascinated by the technology, the history, but also just kind of cope with the horror of it. Yeah. And I feel like Mandalore would be this great, great history lesson and the kind of travel I like of really digging into the, like, what is this place all about? What can we learn from this place? You know, and there'd be so much pride, right? Mandalore would be that kind of like, you know, there'd be tour guides out on the street saying like, I'm going to tell you what Mandalore is about. It's such a place of pride, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great answer. And to even clarify for myself, like I'm looking at like Sabine's home planet of Crownest or Crownest, depending on how you want to say it there. I'd head there because I love number one, her house, the house Wren house is like a James Bond villain hideaway. The big third act happens in. I love that. So overall, you know, not saying that you should put more choices. I'm just saying like I want for myself. I'm like Mandalore as a whole. There's a lot of things to see there. A lot of things. I don't want to overlook that there. But I'm still packing a park and heading to Ilum, I guess.
Right, but you could go to the Mandalorian-controlled systems the same way somebody says, like, I'm going to Europe, and then you're going to stop at all these different places.
There you go. That's a great one.
Yeah, good call. So we move on to Rogue One. We got Lamu, the Ring of Khafrin, Wobani, Edu, and Scarif. Ken, are you just going to Scarif?
No. I thought about it, and I'm not just trying to be, I'm trying to, yeah, I don't know. I'm not trying to be contradictory here. I think I might go to Lamu, but here's what. So Scarif is look, if I'm a stormtrooper, I'm heading there. I mean, I want to work hard for that assignment. That's what I want to do. And again, I've said before, I grew up a mile from the beach, could see the beach from my house, but my beach was, you might've had swim trunks on, but you also had a hoodie. So Scarif is almost too beautiful for me. Silly. We've had a lot of great databank brawls there. I think Lamu, we don't see obviously much of it there. There's some, if I'm packing up and maybe I don't do I'm going to go right weekends. I should need to do more, but I've thought about that kind of stuff. But I think I'd head there. Wobani, no. Edu, I love the red rain, but that's not a inviting surface, at least what we see. Ring of Khafrin is interesting because having said all these wonderful things about Coruscant, what we see of that city, that's almost where the small town boy in me turns down the wrong street in Manhattan and is like, oh, this isn't home. Ring of Khafrin has a little rough edges there, you know, which I would love to experience. I don't want to change it, but I don't think I'd spend too much time there. But Lamu, of these choices, I'm going to go out left field. I'm going to take that idyllic, quiet place to just kind of relax and focus and get away from Krennic.
Yeah, Lamu is really a place to recenter, right? Just spend quality time with your loved ones, you know, make a nice stew, read a book in the evening, kick back. I'm sure the sunset's beautiful.
Yeah. Is it super exciting? No, but that's the point. I don't need it.
Exactly. I think that's great. And I was tempted by a couple of the others, not Wobani or Edu. They don't look pleasant, but I got to go to Scarif. And I want to think that Scarif is the planet that would have, would be like visiting in America, a Civil War, you know, reenactment. I feel like that's the planet where you would like really tour the battlefield and it would be both beautiful, but also historically, amazing. I'm assuming that it's either been recreated or the water has lowered. But I'm just it's one of the most beautiful planets in Star Wars. I think it's such a great switch that something so scary happened in such a beautiful place. You know, we see a little bit of scary stuff happening on Naboo, but Scarif is just there's just something kind of magic about it. And I do just want to hang out there, maybe learn a little bit of history, but mostly just stare at the water and the palm trees and maybe wear short trooper armor.
Yeah, maybe you do that. And just, you know, if you're staring out there and there's a giant red cloud suddenly appears, try to get out of there fast or hold on to someone. Yeah.
They would be very have to be very careful with the way they advertise it, right? Of like, Scarif, hold on to your loved ones. No, not like that.
Not like that.
Don't worry. We're going to move on to Solo, a Star Wars story. We got a lot of planets, some of them not new to Star Wars, but some we get to see on the big screen, right? Corellia, Vandor, Kessel, Saverine, Mimban, Numidian Prime, tons of options. Where do you go?
Now, we obviously get to see a little bit more Kessel in Clone Wars Season 7, and a lot of it I'd say I like. Mimban, that doesn't, no disrespect to the Mimbanese there, not the most inviting planet. Numidian Prime, oh, I like this. A little too tropical for me, you know, if we're getting personal here, a little too the tropical heat and humidity. Vandor, I love it. So I love the snow. I love a good lodge. You might think I'd want to head there. I'm going to go Saverine.
Ooh.
The reason being, that reminds me a little bit more of my hometown. Beaches with cliffs. Not saying it's cold there. It looks kind of warm, but I bet there's a cold ocean breeze that comes on in there. So Saverine, it's a very humble setup there. Maybe not even humble by choice. Maybe they'd like a luxury hotel. I'm not saying one needs to be put up there, but I think I could make my way there and be okay for a bit and take some time out there and just kind of learn what the people are about there. And I got to imagine Enfys Nest, I think she returns there. I think that's a base of operations for me in my head canon with the Cloud Riders. So I'm going Saverine. Corellia is a great choice. History there, but not in the best spot. So, it's not the best, damn empire. Foot of oppression down on that fair city, fair planet. So Saverine's my answer.
No, I think that's a very good one. And I can picture you sitting in a hut, being served like some good whiskey and or brandy or in a little dusty glass, and then just, watching Young Guns 2 on your iPad.
There you go. That's all.
It's got a good Western vibe for you. Yeah. I did go with Corellia. I'm going to hope in my imagination that this is post Empire. Man, I think for me, I kind of went where your mind did with the Death Star with our first question of like the tours of the shipbuilding factories, right? Nice. Just the absolute awe of this is where these amazing ships are made. Here's how they're made. And I love the way what we saw of it in Solo, that it's got all of these little land masses connected by these long bridges. I think it's because of those really young childhood memories driving across country from Minnesota to Oregon that I really love bridges. Like, I think I still kind of have like a little childhood magic about being on a bridge. So zipping along those ocean bound bridges, man, that would be great. Yeah. And then I also think Corellia would have, for the tourists, great flight simulators where you could pretend you were flying. It'd be totally safe.
Yeah.
And then they would have some extremely real, extremely local bars.
Very real.
Very real. You'd have to be polite of like, is it okay that a tourist comes here? Or is this absolutely just for people who are working on YT-1300s, you know?
Oh, don't head to the Double Down Saloon in Las Vegas, people. Don't do that if you're a tourist. I can tell you from personal experience.
Fair enough. So we head into the great big old sequel trilogy. We go to The Force Awakens. We got Jakku, Takodana, Dakar, Hosnian Prime, briefly, sadly, Octo, Starkiller Base, which is technically Ilum, so maybe we shouldn't have it because it is cheating. Ken, where do you go?
Look, ooh, your rules are great, man. This is a great game. This episode turned into some sort of game show. choose your planet. It's if Octo's the one, look, I Octo, especially with where I am in life, I'm not saying it's a good spot. Octo would be the spot. Not that it's comfortable, but Takadana's coming in close. I mean, I'd love to rent a room at Maz's castle for a weekend, just kind of get away. The car is really an underrated planet. I think it's kind of pretty in its own way. Yeah, Hosnian Prime, we don't spend a lot of time on, but we've already picked Coruscant. I imagine that's somewhat similar. Starkiller Base, I think, is fine. But yeah, Octo, let's just do it. Let's just get right to that island. As Kylo says, I see it. I see the island.
I book a trip to the island. Yeah. Maz's castle is tempting for the Takadana experience. But yeah, Octo, I think it's the way it's presented, not only in The Force Awakens, but obviously The Last Jedi. When I think of Octo, I think of it as being like an extremely, like you book a weekend there and you're the only one there, right? Mm-hmm. This is a getaway from everything. The only stuff that you have is the stuff that you bring with you, and you have to be real responsible on the island because the Lenae are watching you, right? And I think you mentioned it. It's something that I really want to do is I really want some writing retreats.
Yeah.
I think sometimes writing takes a long time, but sometimes that's because you get distracted by everything else. And if you have nothing to do, if you've got your food with you right next to you, and all you have to do is open your mind up and totally live in the world of the story you're trying to figure out,
yeah,
you can write something pretty magical pretty fast. And I think I've got an obsession with this because one of the last things I did almost a year ago was I've talked about it. I'm finally going to do it. I had booked a weekend at a hotel in LA, and I was just going to like, I got an outline of a movie. I'm just going to go bang it out for 2.5 days. And it was like right when everything was, oh, we're closing down. So I canceled that trip. And yeah. I would love to go to Octo, just sit in a hut with my pre-packed salami, my little cooler of beer and maybe some gin, and just write a movie or a novel with no internet.
That's the rub right there. That's all Luke wanted to do. Luke was like, I'm off social, everybody. I deleted my Instagram. I'm over.
It really is like Ray's like, I put you into Google search. You're not on the internet. You've disconnected.
Right. Ray's like, we keep tagging you in post. You can see it. Luke's like, I muted every word. I muted every word related to this.
Your account isn't even locked. You've deleted them all.
But I found you on LinkedIn. Yes. Ah, damn it. I forgot about LinkedIn. I left that up.
Yeah. There's utter magic of Octo. And I know you can visit the island, but
yes.
You can't, to my knowledge, sit there for a weekend.
Yeah. No.
And that's what I want to do. Any more thoughts on Octo before we move on to The Last Jedi?
I do want to visit that Octo gift shop where Luke's green lightsaber is, apparently. So.
Yeah, and just random stuff that visitors have left that the Lenae have collected. The lost and found gift shop.
Yeah.
That sounds great. And the other thing about Octo is you think you got a really peaceful time, but then the Lenae's pirate spouses might come back and suddenly have a super loud party.
But then I'm running down. I'm running as fast as Ray. I'm heading over there, and I'm going to swing my lightsaber, too.
You ran so fast. Yeah, absolutely. We're going to run fast now, though, to The Last Jedi. New planets. We got Cantonica, home of Canto Bite, or Crate. I didn't consider the First Order Supremacy ship a planet. So Cantonica, Crate.
Fair enough, sir.
But, yeah, what do you got?
God, it's Cantonica. I'm going to Canto Bite now. I've got one foot out the door. You kidding me? As much as I love Las Vegas, I know Canto Bite's also got a little bit more like, Monte Cristo or some other kind of exotic location with a little Atlantic City sprinkled in too. But Vegas, the vibe, the gambling, the people, the drinks, the droids spitting coins at you, I'm in the Canto Bite.
Yeah. The Monte Carlo, is that? Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking of a Monte Cristo sandwich. I'm hungry. Monte Carlo.
Yeah, but I'm sure you can get a Monte Cristo in the Monte Carlo that is Cantonica. Yes. Yeah, this is Cantonica for me as well. Is this like in, if you were going to do ranking, which we could on your show, Star Wars Ranked, if you haven't already, is this like your number one? If you could go to any location in Star Wars, you go to Space Vegas. Is that?
It might be. Look, I think I'm going to be responsible and say Endor or something like that. But even right now, as we're speaking, like I was chatting with Mark Ellis, our buddy, and he's getting ready to, when it's right, and already in some places it's seeming feasible to get back onto some limited engagement stand-up shows. And I don't know if I'll be traveling much with him this time around, but like we were talking about like the year ago, almost last week, I think to a year, we were in Vegas at the Hard Rock at Mandalay Bay. I just love it. I just love it. And I know I shouldn't. Now, my uncle just moved out there. My cousin lives out there. They're like, come visit. I'm like, no, you have a house. I want to go to a casino. So I gotta temper myself. I'm not going to move there, Joseph, but I'm going to go visit there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that is, I think that's absolutely great. I'm all on board with Canto Bite. I think one of the things that's got me excited about Canto Bite is thinking about the different things that travel can be. And we've talked mm-hmm. about kind of like more rugged adventure. We've talked about comfort or maybe, you know, if you're a creative type, a creative getaway. One of the things that I haven't been thinking about as much is just like an explosion of fun with friends, right? Of a reunion or a, you know, bachelor, bachelorette, however you want to phrase that these days, that kind of get together. That mm-hmm. wouldn't it be great to meet a bunch of friends at Canto Bite, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. See, here's the thing, not to get so philosophical, but like, you know, not that I could never really do that, but you know, to me, Vegas or Cantonica represents the study. It's a false front, right? It's a facade. That's what roses look around you, and Finn's kind of got my look. It's great. Look around you, and there's dark sides, this and that, and that's the appeal to me. The consistent appeal of Las Vegas for people that like it. I know some people that don't love the city, or the experience there. It is all not necessarily a lie, but it's you getting to kind of pretend to be someone else. And there's danger in that. And Vegas has those dangers, Sin City indeed. So you know what I mean? Like, and that comes from me when I said I didn't travel much as a kid. And I mentioned I was a young adult, mid-20s, I think it was. And my friend Brian was about 10 years older than me. He was like, you know, let's go to Vegas this weekend. I was like, you can't just do that. We got to plan this months in advance. He's like, no, pack a bag. I got us a room. We're going to go Friday. And then I got there, and that's the first time I felt connected with the bigger world. But that's false, right? It's not necessarily true. Paris Casino isn't the world, but you feel it. And I love that about the city. This is why I get so excited. And you and I got to spend some time in Vegas. And there's no rules. It's like, Joseph, you want to meet in the hotel lobby bar at 2 in the morning? We can. Like, no one's telling us we can't. So that's what Cantonica, the good and the bad, it'd be a test. It'd be a Jedi-like test of your moral fiber.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's the gambling aspect of it, right? Of it's all this Ritz and glamour and like all of it. Do you feel a part of the world? Like, well, the explicit point is to separate you from your money, you know? I'm a big fan of Rat Pack. They're definitely an entertainment of their time. It's a complex subject, but got this great Dean Martin live album that was not released in his lifetime because the Rat Pack kept recording shows in Vegas, and then they'd get too honest and they couldn't release them at the time. And it's like a 4 a.m. show where it's, you know, there's definitely normal people there, but there's a bunch of entertainers. He introduces all of the entertainers at the end, and it takes like 5 minutes because there's so many there. And like at the end, he's like, well, that's about it for my show. Just head out that door. They're at the tables waiting for you, and they're going to rip you apart. And it's just, that's the fun of Vegas, what you're talking about, of like, it is the illusion, but the illusion is so thin.
Yes.
That even like, you know, the whole point of like, was you can see it's one of the biggest stars in the world, like Dean Martin, and get, you know, steak and free drinks for like $6 in, you know, the early 60s. Why? Because they're going to rip you apart and everybody knows it. It's such a thin illusion.
I mean, you've been with me when I'm running around the wind going, Joseph, I found a Game of Thrones slot. I know I'm going to lose. I know I'm 2 minutes away from losing $100.
But you're so excited to do it.
I might not, you know. So.
Yeah, you might. Yeah, and Candle Bite, you're right. I mean, I really like that it isn't just the casino town. It plays with some of those ideas of like, we're pretending to be classy, but, you know, scratch the surface. That's not what's really going on.
Yeah. Sorry. And it's tied to the Star Wars of it all. It's why I still love that planet and that idea and that concept. And whether or not you love individual story beats and points in the Canto Bite stuff in Last Jedi, I can respect that. A lot of people don't. But I keep saying I wish I spent more time there simply because Rian Johnson saying, I wanted to see the upper crust. I wanted to see the rich of the galaxy. We've been to the bars on Tatooine. I wanted to go to this world where it was an illusion. It's a fascinating thing to look at in Star Wars. And I loved it.
Yeah, I'm going there and I am just sitting there and doing a lot of people watching. I'm not playing the tables. I'll do like one and say, I'm going to lose my, you know, 50 credits or whatever. And they're going to be gone. But then, man, you know, if at all possible to do a show, Canto Bite's the other place. I would absolutely want to do a show.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right, moving on. We could spend all day at Canto Bite. We're going to move on to the Rise of Skywalker. I did not include all of the light speed skipping planets because we have more than enough options. But we got Agent Kloss. We have Pazana. We have Kajimi. We have Kefbir. We have Exegol. Listing the planets from Rise of Skywalker is a great vocal warm up.
Yeah,
they're all bordering on little tongue twisters. But I made it through. Ken, where are you going?
Man, I'll just say this. If anyone ever doubts that how much I actually love this movie, I love every one of these planets. They're so different. Yes, there's sand in some. There's trees in others. Yes, we thought one was Endor for a while. We get to see Endor at the end. I love these planets. I love that they're here in the Star Wars galaxy. Exegol, too scary. Ken would love to read about it, but wouldn't go. Kefbir, again. That you want to know what it's like standing in Shell Beach, my hometown. There's Seal Beach in SoCal by Long Beach, south of Long Beach. There's Shell Beach near my hometown, like a minute away from my house. That's what Kefbir is, Shell Beach. High cliffs, wind, storm, rain sometimes. You can head on down. You got about a foot of the beach before you hit ocean, and it's cold and stormy, and I love doing that. But I'm going to answer... God, I do love the Aki Aki. I'm going to go Kajimi.
Ooh.
Kajimi, not, you know, the First Order oppressing everyone around there. I'm going to hopefully go post. Well, I was going to say can't go post Rise of Skywalker.
Pre.
In some other alternate timeline where the First Order is conquered and that planet survives. That looks like a little kind of little snowy mountain village that I'd like to go live in. Like a little bit, like it's not super, super straight ahead foresty, but you know what I mean? But the cold, the frigid air, and the little kind of cabin community on a hill. And there's a lot of other different kind of design, aspects to Kajimi that aren't necessarily American forest. I get that, but there's some of that I could see living there, a little kind of mountain community. And I liked it.
Yeah. No, there is a little vibe. I visited a friend who, for a weekend, who has a place in Arrow Bear. It's just a great
Arrow Bears. Yeah.
Great town. A great name of a town. I think I would maybe brave the cold of Kajimi because it is that brief, like you bustle from your, you know, hotel that's made out of some ancient stone monastery and you bustle into like a really cozy little bar, really warm, you know. Some alien shouting out trivia questions. It sounds cozy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No. And there's a lot of different influences there. I know there was even like a Japanese design aesthetic kind of, I remember in the documentary, I think even Mark Hamill points that out. So there's a lot of different things there and a lot of different people I think might be coming through, even though it seems like Zori Bliss and everyone has trouble getting to the colonies. I'll rent a room in Kajimi.
So Kajimi was a temptation for me. Agent Kloss is a temptation to me because it's just so peaceful. I love the description in the Rise of Skywalker novelization where Leia reflects on the fact that she and Luke trained there and Luke called it nice Dagobah. That it has just as much of a connection to the Force because there's so much life there, but it's not, you know, a slimy mud hole. Yeah. But you know what, Ken? This is the one that I would maybe actually camp for, is to go to the Aki Aki Festival.
Yeah.
I would not go to Pisana just to go to Pisana. That is really hard living. But I feel like I've never been, but I feel like the Aki Aki Festival has a little bit of Burning Man vibes, where it's rough it, but also there's 1,000 other people that you could, that I could ask for help when I, you know, absolutely inevitably forget something or make some bad choice or didn't know I needed this kind of cream to prevent this, you know, that I could probably just pop over to somebody else's camp. Like, yeah, I'm sorry, I don't normally camp. You got anything for me?
God bless you, burners. I know there's a lot of some of my closest friends are burners. They invite me every year, and every time I'm like, did they put up a Ramada in there yet? I'm like,
yeah, out of all of them, this is the one. Like, that Aki Aki Festival is so beautiful. It's so important to the story, you know, it's so important to the heart of Rise of Skywalker that this is what they're fighting for. This is what the heroes are fighting for. The, you know, different cultures coming together and celebration and storytelling and food and you know, fireworks and that mood. Dance. That's one of those, like, this is the kind of thing where my wife would encourage me to do it and I would be grumpy. And then when I went there, I'd be like, yeah, that was an experience you couldn't get anywhere else. And I enjoyed it. Damn it.
100%.
All right. Any other thoughts on Rise of Skywalker planets?
No, other than they're just damn beautiful. I love them.
Absolutely beautiful. So we're going to go on to The Mandalorian. We got to pay some tribute to, I would say, going back to our early conversation point, this spirit of Star Wars being a travelogue. Boy, is this about Mandalorian going from point A to point B and back again. So here are some of the planets, some of them named in the show, some of them not. We got Maldo Creus is the ice planet where Mando gets the Mithral. Then, of course, Navarro, Arvala 7, where Queel hung his hat, Sorgon. We got Trask, the water planet. We've got Corvus, of course, featuring the city of Caladan. Tython, we all know the tragedy of Tython. Carthon Chopfields. And finally, Morak is the planet featured in the penultimate episode of the second season, that Imperial base there.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? This is I'm trying to, you know, every planet here has something that I'm like, ooh, but then you step outside your door and not good. Tython, as we've discussed it before, but we could literally hit off the 118 freeway right now if we wanted to. Hiked up there before. I got to say, and funny, Trask is not unlike parts of my hometown area, Avila Beach. You can head on out almost to the Diablo Canyon power plant, and there's a lot of fishing ships and those kind of, like, that kind of vibe, and a great restaurant with some chowder too. I might have to go Sorgon, because the only risk is those kind of pirates, and if they're defeated, you got yourself an idyllic little land.
Yeah, and you got the booze, you got it all, right?
Yeah, nice people, good community. I'm there at Sorgon.
Yeah, and it's an organized fist fighting. I don't think that's your thing, but
yeah, I'll put some dollars down.
Gamble a little bit on Sorgon. Yeah, this one was fun because this is really a tour of different places where things try to eat Mando.
yeah.
But I tell you, I got to go to Trask. I need to eat Quarren clam chowder out of a ceiling hose. I have to. We had so much fun, you and I, talking about that. Of that's not for you.
Yes.
The food stuff. You know, there's something about travel where sometimes there is, you know, you can go to a well-known place or an adventurous place, and sometimes it's fun when there's just like a weird, specific, idiosyncratic thing that you want to do. And it's just like, I set out to do a weird thing and I do it. The first time I went to the UK, my girlfriend at the time had grown up partially in the UK, and she's a real experienced traveler. And she was just like, we can go anywhere. We can do anything. And very much like when your friend was taking you to Vegas, like, we can do that.
Yeah.
And at the time, a small company was making these Doctor Who action figures that weren't that great. But they were the only Doctor Who action figures, and I loved them. And I'd ordered them from the internet. And, you know, the back of this action figure package had this address of their factory that had like a little store attached and a little Doctor Who experience with some props. And like, to me, you know, utterly, totally mysterious, foreign. It's a place, it's somewhere in Wales with words that I cannot pronounce. And she was like, yeah, we can look it up and we can just go there. And it's from looking at the back of an action figure package.
Oh, wow.
And it was like a mission. And, yeah. It, you know, good friend. Now, it was so great of her to introduce that spirit of adventure and say, we can just pick this mission. Mm-hmm. And, you know, her thing was like, I like to travel. I like to see places. I kind of just want a reason to go. And the fact that you want to go buy Doctor Who action figures from the source, fine, we'll go all the way to Wales to do that. And that's the way I feel when I think about Trask, of just like, it's just a fun challenge of just like, it's not a big tourist stop. Looks kind of beautiful, kind of rainy. The Quarren there wears sweaters, but I just want to go to that one place and eat chowder out of a ceiling hose. That's the goal.
love it. Love it. There's, I mean, looking at these, they do such a good job introducing new planets. They really do. Arvala 7 is an intriguing option, but I love my solitude, so I can say that. But I like Navarro. I'm rooting for Navarro to just grow as a planet and a city. But, you know, again, you step outside, you go get some scenery, and you get some like bat monsters picking you up from the air, flying you off. How about that?
Yeah, yeah, a lot of dangers there on Navarro. You got little force users stealing your cookies.
Yeah,
nothing safe on Navarro. Ken, did you keep track of all of your choices for your travel agenda?
I could answer. I didn't write them down, but yes, I did.
All right. Well, tell you what, I'll go first, and then we'll finish with you. I want to summarize where we picked out. So. Yeah. For myself, I'm going to Alderaan for the museums, Cloud City for the shopping, Endor for the interactive rebellion exhibits, Coruscant to do some stand-up and some Jedi tours, Kamino, do some pretend I'm a clone, Kashyyyk, let a Wookiee carry me through the trees, Mandalore, go to the war museums, Scarif, also battle place reenactments, Corellia, I want to tour those shipyards, Octo, I'm going to write a movie. Cantonica, I'm going to drink and hang out with pals. Pisana, I'm going to try to have a good Burning Man experience while watching the Aki Aki dance. And then I'm going to Trask to eat some chowder.
Well done, sir. Well done. That's a life well lived right there. I'm going to the Death Star to study the infrastructure of evil, apparently. I'm going to go get some culture and faux culture at the urban living lifestyle center that is Cloud City on Bespin. We're all going to Endor. We're going to get different experiences out of there, but mostly I just want to hang out with Logre and Chirpa and everyone. Coruscant for me, and going to get that big city life and turn my back on the relaxing calm of Naboo. Kamino for some rain, though. In my heart, I might want to go to Geonosis, but let's go hang out with some wonderful folks making clones on Kamino, apparently. Then from there, you know, we're going to Kashyyyk because I want to stay in the nice parts, the parts with the nice huts and the good loyal pals. And then I'm going to get some history, some culture, some mystic culture with Ilum. But then I'm going to go get isolated on Lamu and Severine, though Severine, you know, I might end up retiring to there. We just don't know about that. Despite wanting to drink with Amaz and everyone at the castle, I'm going to head to Octo to finally live out my dreams as someone who's disconnected from everything. But really, in my heart, I want to spend the rest of my days at Cantonica. I just know I can't. So maybe I'll go somewhere in the middle and go to Kajimi to a nice oppressed, dangerous mountain community with some good people. And then round it all out, I will probably get to Sorgan one day as soon as the pirates are taken care of.
I love the picture that's emerging that there are bursts of being highly social, doing yeah. shows, being around just millions of people on Coruscant and on Cantonica. But largely, you are touring to see where you might retire to.
This is, once again, sir, you're so good with themes. You are describing most conversations around my house with Grace going, you're just, you know, out and about at the bars. You're so funny and zippy and funny on stage. But at home, you're just kind of quiet and stoic. And I'm like, yeah, we're home. That's what we do here.
And I'm just looking at maps, picking out other places that I can be quiet and stoic in the future.
Well, I tell all my friends, I'm telling you, I'm going to do it. One of these days, I'm going to just move to Big Bear. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to do. I'll never do it. I'll never do it.
But it is fun to threaten.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm going to Big Bear. That's the definitely, if you were a sitcom character, that would be your tagline right now. Yeah. That's it. I'm going to Big Bear.
Yeah, that's it.
Ken, has going through this exercise made you think anything new about Star Wars as a travelogue of Star Wars, as a narrative that is built to take us to different places and different cultures?
I don't think it's made me think of anything new. I think it's confirmed what I think I've always connected to. We talked about Star Tours. I think I said it was 8 or 9. Star Tours didn't open up till I was around 10 or 11, around that age, but we were there first year. Within the first few months, we were fortunate enough to go there, Star Tours in 87, 88, whatever it was. And I was fascinated by that. I was fascinated by the headcanon of it all about what if those ships did need to go attack the Death Star? Could they do it? Could they help? I think it would help to have them in the fleet, but also the idea of just seeing it as this galaxy that you can go touch and see and visit and experience. It's so key to Star Wars, whippy, zippy adventure you and I always talk about, the whiz bang, as you say often, comes from just different people, different cultures, different worlds, and seeing it in Star Wars. It's very important, and this just confirms that. And I want to travel the galaxy.
Yeah, very, very well said. I think for me, it really makes me think about this duality of comfort and adventure, and how I think about that for travel. I think about that just kind of for how you approach life. I think for you, it's a little bit of like when you're at home and you're comfortable, you're stoic and you're thinking through your things, and then you're having some adventures when you're out in the bar, and you know, like that balance is needed. And I think there's this great balance in Star Wars where they're you visit some planets and now they've become familiar, or they're really familiar to the characters, and the characters are trying to go home. And then there is that sense, that familiar, comforting sense that the galaxy is real, and we as fans know these planets and they're all connected and it's all real. But then there's an adventure where any moment, any character could suddenly crash on a planet they've never heard of, that they know nothing about, and there could be anything lurking under the surface. And I think Star Wars is, you know, its movement through all of these planets that they've created and will still create has this great vibe of, it has the realism of this is a real world that you can chart. How long would it take to get from point A to point B, or what route might you, hyperspace route you might take? But then it always, always has that unknown where you never know when you might encounter something new that recaptures that sense of wonder.
Excellent. Well said. And let's all not forget, Luke stared out of those twin suns, dreaming not just of a life of a hero, but just a bigger world out there beyond what he knew. And Star Wars continues to build from that, I think.
Yeah. Well, it was great staring out at the twin suns and dreaming with you, Ken. I have one final travel question.
Oh.
If invited, would you go to Mortis?
Oh, no. 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 So now, so if I'm invited, no. If you stumble on there, it's fine. But see, you would say things, right? You'd be like, hey, this, you get to this beautiful plant life. There's this angelic kind of woman on one side, a kind of dark, disturbing guy on the other side. But yeah, they're both interesting together. They fight. It's kind of fun to watch. Then you got the father. And even if the father is now Ezra and everything switched over, because that's clearly going to happen. No. I don't want to draw it to too real world of comparisons, but there's some places like one of my old bosses, he and his wife love traveling the world. And they'd go to some of those places of like, well, first, so the armed guards picked us up from the boat and took us to our cabin, which had netting around it. Oh, for the bugs? No, for the man-eating platypuses that would come by. It all sounds good, but it's, if Mortis sounds great, the fact that you might not be able to leave it, I say, I'm good. I'm going to head to Canto Bight.
Yeah, I think I feel I have the same gut reaction. I feel like if invited to Mortis, I would get tempted and say yes and then regret it immediately. Because like, what have I agreed to?
What have I done?
Do I belong here? Do I need to stay here? What's going on? Mortis is one of the most fascinating destinations in Star Wars, where perhaps Ezra will end up. We don't know. We just like talking about it. We'll find out. Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, you don't have to travel the galaxy too far to find us. Giggity. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram, Facebook as Force Center Podcast. We're on YouTube as well. Subscribe over there. Podcasts available on Anchor, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Amazon Music, a lot of podcast locations. There's even more and more on the way. Merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Always excited to have new patrons on board because when you do get on board, you can get into our Discord community, which is a fun place to talk Star Wars amongst friends. You can follow me at KatNapsock or go to KatNapsock.com or to the new spot to the GPA.fun. Having a lot of fun over there, hanging out and spreading positivity as best we can. Joseph.
Yeah, that sounds great. Check all that stuff out. You can find me at Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw. As Ken said, of course, you can find Force Center on all the social media. This seems like the kind of episode where if people want to share their favorite planet, the destination they'd like to go to, we always love hearing from fans. This is such a fun discussion, so feel free to weigh in on that on our social media. But like I said, for myself, Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all of my other comedy adventures, including the weird fantasy comedy TV show I write for, Tigtone. Both seasons of Tigtone are now streaming on HBO Max. You don't have to travel anywhere, but maybe your couch to check that out. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for all of the fun of Cantonica, this has been Force Center.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.